Today is February the 17th, Sunday a.m. We're on the study of Nehemiah. We had went through the fourth chapter of Nehemiah last week, and we were looking at some of the situations that Nehemiah had faced. And in that, we were applying 1 Corinthians 10:13, as far as where there's no temptation that is overtaking you, but such as common to man, that God is faithful, and He would allow for us to be able to find a way of escape in that temptation, to be able to endure or to bear it. And we were looking at what the temptations were that Nehemiah was faced with in the fourth chapter, what he could have been tempted with, and how he overcame those temptations, or what methods he did, realizing that, again, everything is common to us. It just may come in a different shape, a different form. We still face the same things that Nehemiah would face. And so the avenues that he went through, or the way of escape, is also the ways that we can do as far as escaping the temptation. It's not that the temptation is not going to be there. It's going to be there. It's how we handle it or what we do. We have to look for that way of escape. And within that, the main thing that you're going to have to go by in looking for that way of escape is to go back to God's Word. How God's Word would direct you. You have to have it in ready mind of how God's Word would direct you and how you would endure, be able to endure that temptation. One of the greatest things that we've seen so far is prayer. Prayer is the greatest thing that Nehemiah used in overcoming the temptations. He always went to God in prayer. We had left off in chapter 4. We were looking at verses 7 and 8 of chapter 4, and looking at the situation that occurred and then the temptation. So, since the work did not cease, we see in 7 and 8 verses that Sanballat gains a coalition to join in with his efforts to deter the building. Now he goes to others and starts incorporating others, recruiting others in this coalition. In verses 7 and 8, came about when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, the Ashdodites heard that the repair of the walls of Jerusalem went on and the breaches began to be closed, they were very angry. So he is recruiting others with him to deter the building. Anger and malice is the point that they wanted to do physical harm, possibly murder, against those doing the work. They were conspiring with others to do wickedness. When you look at Romans chapter 1, we see the nature, and it's the nature that you're always going to be confronted with. We see the nature of Sanballat and those that he had a coalition with. And when you look back at the first of chapter 4, and you look at what all was done in chapter 2, verse 19, and then chapter 4 and so forth, we see that in looking at this, the nature in verses 29 and 30 of Romans chapter 1, being filled with all unrighteousness, being filled with wickedness, being filled with greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil. We see all of this, and you can see those coming out in the actions of Sanballat, Tobiah, and Gershom. We can see that in coming out into the others, that how this comes out to play, that these are the avenues that they're falling into. These are the characteristics or the traits that they have. So you have the threat of violence to be exacted against the people. All of them conspired together in verse 8 of chapter 4. All of them conspired to come together and fight against Jerusalem and cause a disturbance in it. As we had looked at last week, this has already happened before when you go to Ezra and look at Ezra, that they'd already went through this once before, the same situation, but not to the extent that the physical harm was going to come about as far as fighting against them. The letters from the king, pretty well, they accepted that. The king stopped the work of the rebuilding of the temple, and so the people gave in to that. And, of course, everything's been going kind of smooth since then because Tobiah and Sanballat and them got what they wanted. Now, years later, Nehemiah comes back, starting the whole process again. So now it's being escalated that there's threats of violence to be exacted against the people. And so all that Sanballat and them are trying to do in this coalition is to try to cause panic and fear among the people. So what would be the temptation for Nehemiah and for the people? One that I had was to panic and to become afraid, to be overcome by anxiety. For the people, it would be natural for them to complain and murmur against Nehemiah, to lose confidence in him. And you have that as a nature of man in the past. And the example that we had, and I'm sure that Nehemiah was well aware, along with the people, of their history, of the Jewish history of coming out of bondage, out of Egypt, and so forth. And so when you go back, you have the example in Exodus of Moses, who was also trying to lead the people. And in the 14th chapter, Exodus, the 14th chapter, verses 10 through 12, you have those there at the Red Sea where, and as Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them. And they became very frightened. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. You have to consider what they had just seen, what they had just come through. If they had spread the blood over the doorpost, the death angel would have passed over them. But it didn't to the others. So you had this great tumult that was, they just left. You had the screaming, the wailing, the crying all through the night as the firstborn of those were being, they found them dead because the death angel went through. And they saw how God had protected them from that. And you know that they had to feel very fortunate and blessed because of what God had did. But now, they're here, and now they see Pharaoh's army coming. They looked, and behold, they were marching after them, and they became very frightened. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, "Is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, 'Leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." Their faith didn't last very long because, again, they looked at the reality. When you look at the reality of the situation, you lose sight. You lose the perspective. It overtakes you. You become filled with anxiety. You become filled with fear. Because when you look at the reality, you limit God. We limit God in looking at, well, look how it looks. We're surrounded. What can we do? They're a far greater army than us. What can we do? They're coming after us. They're the world power. And so then we limit God. And that's what they did. And so they started blaming Moses. Look what you've done. This is all your fault. We'd have been better off back there. None of this would have been happening. We're not going to lose our life. When you look at the 16th chapter, not long after the Lord provided salvation for them, at the Red Sea in the 16th chapter of Exodus, verse 2 and 3, and the whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the sons of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died by the Lord's hands in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Again, they're fighting Moses and saying, "Look what you've done. This is your fault. We've been better off." When they look back at what their present condition was, we've been better off. They could have easily said, "Nehemiah, things have been going fine. We've been here, no problem, nothing else. Then look, here you come. You're wanting to rebuild the walls. Now look. Look what you brought on us. Look what you've done." Nehemiah, his temptation could have been to lose heart and doubt in his prayer given in chapter 4, verses 4 and 5, where he said, "Hear, O our God, how we are despised. Return their reproach on their own heads and give them up for plunder in a land of captivity. Do not forgive their iniquity and let not their sin be blotted out before thee, for they have demoralized the builders." Now they're going to the other level. They've got a coalition. They're getting his army together to threaten to fight against them. But been easy for Nehemiah to say, God, why didn't you answer my prayer? They're still here now, and now there's more with them than going to attack and fight us than what we had before. Lord, where were you? Why have you done this? Why didn't you answer my prayer? I've done everything that I needed to do for you. I serve you day in and day out, and look, here you are. Things are getting worse. Why didn't you answer my prayer? Had he answered Nehemiah's prayer in the past? In regards to the king, did he ask for the king to show him mercy and grant him mercy? Did the king do that? Did God answer that? It took a while, but God answered it. It would have been easy for Nehemiah to say, things are getting worse. Where you at, God? I pray that you do this. This is reality. Still there. The people are there. Now there's more than before. They're going to come against us in war. And guess what? We're outnumbered. They're fighting people. So with all this, can you think of any other temptations that would have been presented there for Nehemiah? Can you think of any others? Like I say, these are ones that I just came across my mind. And so can you think of any others that if you place yourself in the position of the people or in the position of Nehemiah, that you would have seen as a way that you would have been tempted? The way of escape? What would it have been through these temptations? Again, prayer to God. Consistent in faith, confidence, and trust in the Lord. To remain loyal. That's trustworthiness. To remain loyal to God. Watchfulness. What did Nehemiah do? He set up guards day and night. So there was watchfulness and persevering on his part. Nehemiah also went about to strengthen and encourage the people and the people each other to stand guard against an enemy by which they were outnumbered. What would have been natural instinct? Nehemiah, I'm sorry, but I can't stay in Jerusalem night and day. I can't stay. Well, why? Well, what about my family? They're out there. What if they're attacked? What's going to happen to them? I can't stay here day and night. I've got a family. I've got responsibility to take care of. We see that happen in the next chapter. The grumbling that's going to take place. I can't do that, Nehemiah. What's it going to take? Encouragement from each other. Naturally, if they're against Nehemiah, what's everybody else going to have to do? You're either going to speak for Nehemiah or you're going to speak against Nehemiah. One or the other. That's the way of escape. That's some of the ways. Again, that's just what I thought of. Can you think of any others? Has any others come to your mind with this as far of a way of escape to get out of those temptations? You may have thought of some that, you know, I hadn't even thought of that would come about. But not only is it affecting Nehemiah, but it is also affecting the people now. And it's affecting them and their outlook. Because there's a temptation for them too. That they can quit following Nehemiah. The next one we have is in the fourth chapter again, verses 10 through 12. But we prayed to God, and because of them we'd set up a guard against them day and night. The way they escaped was they turned it over to God. God, it's your will. You will protect us. Thus in Judah it was said, the strength of the burden bearers is failing. Yet there is much rubbish, and we ourselves are unable to build the wall. And our enemy said, they will not know or see until we come among them, kill them, and put a stop to the work. And it came about when the Jews who lived near then came and told us 10 times, they will come up against us from every place where you may turn. Now Nehemiah and the people themselves are facing discouragement from your friends and your brethren. Now they're saying, hey, you know, this is going to happen. You better be careful. Again, I have to stress, they're looking at the reality. They're looking at the situation as they see it from their perspective. It gives a lot of meaning to, we walk by what? Faith, and not by sight. It's hard to walk by faith when you're looking at the reality of something, that you're looking at the situation and the the disparaging way that you've got against you or whatever is just like, well, I don't see no way out. I don't see no way out. And man falls into that trap. And the ultimate end sometimes is when you look at Judas, what was the way that he saw out of his current situation? Suicide. He killed himself. And it's sad to say that a lot of people that have their whole life before them do the same thing. They don't see no way out. And they do the same thing. Walk by faith. That's what Nehemiah did, and that's what he tried to stress the people to do too. So then you got discouragement from your friends and from your brethren. You got continual threatenings. It's constant going on. Now you've got Sanballat over here and Tobiah and all them threatening. Now you've got the people saying, hey, we believe these threats are going to do it. You know, y'all better be careful. What does that do to your anxiety level? Raises it up. Murmuring, complaining. You know, this is going to happen. You can't guard against it. It's going to come about. What in the world have you done, Nehemiah? If you just back off and quit this, it'd all be gone. It'd be solved. Fear, anxiety, reluctance. Well, now I'm not so sure I want to stay and build the wall. You know. What's the temptation that Nehemiah had and that other people had? To succumb to the fears of the people. You know, a lot of times people can influence you greatly, and if they have that fear, before long you're thinking, oh, the same thing, you know, can happen and so forth. And so you become anxious and fearful. Okay? To follow the advice of the people, they could have done that and lose faith in God by looking at the reality of the situation. What does one need to do in regards to this? To follow the advice of the people and lose faith in God by looking at the reality of the situation, what do we need to do in regards to our giving advice? We've got to be very careful, don't we? When we give advice to someone, we have to be extremely careful. Because we can't look, I mean, a lot of times it's easy to look at the situation too and say, oh, you're right. You've got a bad problem. I don't see how you're going to get out of it. There's no way. I don't know what you can do. Maybe you need to do this. Maybe you need to do that to make it all go away. We have to be careful looking at the advice that we might give. Discouragement from your own brethren and the leaders, the nobles, the rulers, and the princes. I'm sure there was self-pity brought in by the people. There could have been self-pity brought in by Nehemiah. The temptation. What would he have said? What could Nehemiah have said? Lord, what'd you put me in? I asked for this, now look at it. You know, what are you doing? I mean, I'm praying to you. I'm trying to do what's right. I'm trying to make Israel not a reproach. And now I've got the people against me. And who did we just look at that faced the same exact thing? Who did we just look at that went through the same thing? Who are you to lead us? Who made you ruler over us? Who was that? Moses faced the same exact thing. He faced the same problem. Moses could have sat back and said, well, you know, why did you do this? Why, you know, and took self-pity. But what was the situation that Moses took? When God got so upset with the people, how did Moses say, yeah, Lord, you pick the people. That's your decision. You take out whatever you feel is necessary for them. Is that the way Moses did it? What did Moses say? Take me. Don't take the people. Nehemiah could have been enveloped into self-pity because he was in this position trying to fight not against only those that are heathens, but also those of his own people. The people could have had took self-pity as far as their situation, and it would be easy for them to relieve that situation because all they had to do was what? See you, Nehemiah, I'm going back home. You got plenty of people here. You take care of it. I'm going back home. What were the ways of escape that we find in the passages that follow after? Edification. Building up. encouraging the people. Steadfastness and courage. Remembrance of the workings of God. What gets you through the temptations? What's the way of escape? To bring back what? The remembrance of God in the situations that He has done things before in with people. In order to be able to do that, what do you have to do? Pardon? Prayer is one, but what else do you have to do?
You have to know what He's done in the past.
You have to know what He's done in the past. And not only do you have to know it, but you have to what?
Believe.
You have to believe it with all your heart, no doubting, no nothing. Because what has happened in the past is true. It's not a story. It's not a fable. It actually happened with real people. It actually happened. And the Lord has given us more than enough examples that when it comes to your life, I mean, when you think about it, what is there? God said, what is there that I can't do? You got people that were thrown into a furnace. I mean, you look at the outcome of that. You see a red hot furnace going on and you got a choice. Either you bow down to it or you don't. They stood their ground. What was it? God was with them. What was the other prayer of Daniel? Well, if God does deliver, He does. If He don't, He don't. You know, it's how you look at it, the perspective. So, the remembrance of the workings of God, we have to remember those. And those at those times will help us get us through the situations. But we got to know what God has done in the past so that we can apply it to the different situations that come in our life. Have they changed any? They haven't. Why? Because of what does 1 Corinthians 10:13 say? There hath been no what? It's common to all. It's just in a different setting. It used to be said it's the same girl, but in a different dress. You know, it's there. It's common to all. So if we know the answers to these and see how people handled them, then there is our way of escape that we can also handle the temptations also. Nehemiah, in this situation, had to be stern, but he had also not to come across as haughty or arrogant. He had to be stern. There's temptations that we have that when people come to us and we speak to them and they speak about their doctrine and so forth, sometimes we have the temptation to do what? We can be stern, but then we can also become what? We can become haughty. We can become arrogant in how we treat them. You have to remember that these people honestly believe in their heart that what they're doing is right. How hard would it have been for you to try to convince Saul that what he was doing was wrong? How hard would it have been for you? Because Saul believed what he was doing was God's will. So it would have been hard to convince. So it is all in how you have to handle the situations and so forth. Again, Nehemiah was, you know, it shows his characteristics that he had in able to handle the situations that was there before him. And he did. But the main one over and over again was prayer. Prayer to God. Any questions on chapter 4? In the temptations. When you go into the next chapter here in chapter 5, try to apply this same thought process. What was the temptations that were there? You know, what was taking place? What was the temptations that was there for the people and for Nehemiah? And what was the way of escape that Paul wrote about, 1 Corinthians 10:13? Where was it that God was able to allow him to endure it? Well, number one, we've already found out that you cannot endure any temptation without who? Without God. You're not going to endure it. It's a guarantee that you're going to do what? You're going to fail. It's a guarantee you're going to fail without God. So you've got to place your confidence and trust in God, no matter what it is, whether it's health, whether it's financial, whether it's family, whether it's religious, whatever. The faith has to go in God, that He will handle it. Does God know the situation?
Yes.
He knows it all. He knows each one's heart. God knew Sanballat, Tobiah, and Gershom's heart. He knew what they were doing. Did God know about it ahead of time? God knew what they were doing ahead of time. He knew that they were going to bring this alliance and this threatening of fighting. Okay? How did God take care of it? How did God take care of it? When the people, the alliance, saw that they continued building and this thought had, and this was made known to them, what did that coalition do? They lost heart in it, didn't they? Because when the thing became known and they knew that it became known to Nehemiah, they lost heart in it. So what didn't come about? They weren't attacked. Nothing like that. Now, was that just luck? Was that consequence? Was that fate? The providence of God? God answered the prayer. What should that have done to the people? Now, I'm sure there's probably some of them with the temptation that they continued and went on and thought what? They were probably still afraid and thought, well, we're going to be attacked at any minute. We better still be careful. That probably could have been there in their minds. But God throttled the effort because of the attendance that they had on it. Any other thought or comment on chapter 4?
Probably could have been different ways that God could have handled that situation. He could have just then destroyed those people there who were threatening them. We're told that God's ways are not our ways, and how God handled it may not have, we thought it should have been handled. But by just exposing this plot causes it to cease.
Right. Well, when you think about it, as you said, God could have wiped them out in the middle of the night with a pestilence, with an angel coming through like He has done before in the old scriptures when you look at the armies and so forth. God could have done that. But what would that have done to the people? What would it have done to the people? What it had done to the people in the past that had saw that? They still turn around and did what?
They still murmured.
even though they saw it and everything and the odds was with them, it still didn't really register with them in totality. Or if it did, it didn't stick there along with them. Because the next situation arose and they saw the actualness of it, then their mind and their intelligence took them off that, well, we're in dire straits. So you just have that process over and over again. What does it mean to totally, and well, this is a whole different thing, but you'll have to study that, on your own. What does it mean to totally turn over your will to God? What does that mean? To totally turn your will over to God and let Him direct. That means in everything. No matter how you see things, no matter how they are, you turn it all over to God. And that's hard. That's hard. Because sometimes we see something and think, well, no, there's, but let God do His thing. So, very good point, C.O. God could have handled it in many ways. The way He handled it, I believe, was for their benefit in however way it would have benefited them. Very good point. Any other? Chapter 5 opens with everything peachy keen, isn't it? No, it doesn't. Chapter 5 opens with a great outcry taking place from within the people against their fellow Jews. They're not against the enemy anymore. Now they're fighting against who? Grumbling against who? Among themselves. Not only did Nehemiah face extreme hindrances externally, but now we find that he also faces internal hindrances. In this, we can see how Satan can attack from all sides to bring about discouragement so as to make one's work unproductive or to dishearten an individual in his endeavor. And that's what Satan does. There are several complaints or grievances that are brought from the common people against the nobles and the rulers. This has been something that has been taking place. It is something that continues to take place at the time of Nehemiah. Okay, and as far as what the upper class, the nobles and the rulers, are doing against the common people. You have to realize that during this time too, that there was something that was taking place. I think there's 13 of them mentioned in the scriptures in all. But there's one here that's mentioned. And what is that? There was one that Agabus talked about in the New Testament. There was one that Joseph had to tell about. Remember what it was? There was a famine. Okay. And this famine has great effect upon the people in order for their survival or their continuance in their daily necessities. And so we're going to look next week at the grumbling and the complaining that occurs because of this famine and because of the situations that they're in, because we're out of time. Any question or comment? All right. Thank you.